This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 3, 2, 1. Three thumbs up. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday and doing what I love to do on a Friday afternoon with two of my favorite people. I am doing a podcast with my co-hosts, Michael Martin. Hey, Michael.
Yay, it is fry yay for me.
And my other co-host, Andy Piper. How the heck are you?
I'm good. If it's fry yay for Michael, it's double fry yay for me because I am done for the day and for the weekend, so... Yeah. Woo. Although I'm looking out the window and it's London and, you know, it's May and winter is continuing. So, yeah, may not be quite such an exciting weekend. Although we do have the Eurovision Song Contest, which is a...
Yeah, I saw it. Oh, yes. Tonight, isn't it?
Well, it's this weekend. So that we're allowed to gather indoors again, we may go visit some friends and do what we Brits do best, which is... bemoan our lack of musical ability and laugh at other European nations and their incredible displays of pizzazz.
So I do recall a certain New Order Eurovision contest winner from a while back. It was The World in Motion. And that was one of my favorites. And it was around the World Cup time, as I recall, too. And England had done... pretty darn well throughout that tournament, and I was watching it with a few English friends of mine throughout. So World in Motion was one of the good songs from New Order.
Well, it's interesting though that you talk about, you know, the London time and yay and all that fun stuff. I wanted to let you know that I did last weekend after our recording, I did take Microsoft Flight Simulator and try to buzz your house.
Were you successful?
No, because my sense of direction of the London geography does not lead me well to find a house in a neighborhood. I don't like set a actual GPS point on the places I want to go. I try to follow roads, and there were like three different London airports that I tried, and all of them ended up pointing me in an area that I didn't actually see what I recognize as London, so that I could then use that as a landmark to then find, you know, the right interstate and use another computer running from to GPS map. But I did buzz my house a couple of times and my parents, so at least, you know, all things being said. I actually tried to land in their backyard and of course flipped the plane upside down. and that is what would happen, because they do, you know, they have a big back area where they have their little mini garden/farm and it's on this big long area of grass where I could in theory land a small light plane. So had I tried in real life, I probably would have flipped it there.
What were you flying, Michael?
Oh God! It's one of the small Cessnas.
Okay.
I don't want to pour cold water on to things at the very beginning of the show, but I just been fact checking, I feel obliged as a European member of the team to say that World of Motion is an amazing song, and I believe it was, in fact, it was New Order's only number one, but it was not in Eurovision. They hoped it would be in Eurovision. It was one of their World Cup England sort of anthems.
Yes.
But it was not in Eurovision, unfortunately. But anyway, let's move moving right along. Moving right along, as we say. Moving right along.
Because Europe didn't exist back then. When
right, exactly. 1994, come on.
So let's move on. We wanted to start the show off again geeking out just a little bit, and new shinies have arrived. So Andy, how's your iPad?
My shiny new iPad arrived today, and I took it out of the box. I pointed at the animation or whichever way the animations are. I never remember whether you point the new one at the old one or the old one at the new one. I did whatever I got told.
Yes.
And it said, hey, this is going to take about an hour to transfer all your data. Is that okay? And I kind of said, fine. And it took about an hour to transfer all my data. And then it took about another 2 or 3 hours to actually re-download all the apps from the App Store. I haven't managed to try the center stage, the moving, roving, centralized camera thing yet, because I haven't used it for any video conferencing. But it is very fast. I did a Geekbench on the old one before I did the transfer. And I did a Geekbench on the new one after I'd done the transfer and everything had finished and I restarted it. And it's comfortably twice the speed on both of the two, the compute benchmark and the CPU benchmark. I think the compute one is the GPU benchmark, essentially. That's very promising. I will say that I reopened Lightroom on the new one, and it's, as they say, buttery smooth in terms of like flicking between photos and zooming in and out. But it's a pre-buy, really, right? Because I think we've discussed this before, and I've poo-pooed this before, but I do sense that with the M1 chip, I'm not convinced that, first of all, they'll port macOS to it, and not that I think any of us believe that necessarily, but I do think that it's a huge step towards putting a lot of the pro apps on the device. Whether or not they include Xcode, I still am not sure. I still think that Xcode is too fiddly, arguably, to put onto an iPad at the moment, or ever potentially. It really depends on how they retool the multitasking in the next 12 months. But I'm very excited about some of the opportunities here.
While I agree with you conceptually, it won't be Xcode, but it'll be Xcode-ish, for lack of a better term.
The ability to make apps that run locally.
There's something that they released last summer with Xcode, which was a companion app that ran on your iPhone or iPad that allowed you to simulate your screen designs for SwiftUI. Okay. Oh. And if they could allow an iPad to do your Swift UI design work and actually tie that to where instead of it being the viewer, it becomes the layout editor and then pushes the code to Xcode running on a Mac, I think would be brilliant.
I definitely think there are some compelling opportunities. So that, apart that and the fact that I do use it a lot for importing photos from an SD card, looking forward to using the Thunderbolt for that, doing some editing, using the Pencil, those are things I'm excited about. So that's one of the reasons I stepped up. The trade-in value of my old device is really very good because it's it's a year old. So I'm feeling pretty happy about that deal at the moment. And I know that, or I feel that things will get better in the next couple of months.
Yeah. Very cool. I looked at the trade-in for mine. Mine's the 2018, not the 2020. And with it, plus the refund on the DTK.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like $200 for a new iPad for me.
But honestly, look, I said this before when we talked about the AirPods. I accept that I'm a huge Apple fan, and this is not an Apple podcast. This is something that I wanted to do. I'm not going to recommend it to everybody. At the moment, it is same old, same old. It looks physically identical. It's operating a bit more smoothly. I'm kind of in waiting mode to see what comes next.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing with Apple devices. Unless it's a radical design change, you put it over there and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Right? You upgrade and it's okay.
The upgrade process was very, very smooth. I got the new Apple TV as well. I was expecting that to be a very smooth upgrade. I had some Wi-Fi issues, which made it a bit frustrating. But that's otherwise pretty nice as well. It's, it just makes sense the way that everything ties together. But let's, yeah, thanks for asking. That's my input of shiny for now. So let's move on.
On with the show.
The main report. Yep. Well, looking forward to my Apple TV and my experience with that later today, too, and checking things out and seeing how my porting goes.
One really quick thing I'll mention before we do move on. Sorry to jump back in on that, but the new remote is quite a lot thicker and chunkier than the old one. So I've got this lovely little stand that sits on my my TV table and has just got this little slot, and the old one used to sort of just stand up inside it. The new one is probably, I would say, 50% thicker on the back. And I'm still, it's nowhere near as fiddly as the old touchpad thing. But the new jog dial stuff is, I've definitely mistriggered that a few times. But it seems a lot nicer. It's just a mental, you know, whatever the muscle memory thing to get back used to using the device.
Yeah, I've read a couple of reviews about that. We have a few reviews on the iPad here too that are in the show notes. So I'm looking forward to my own experiences with it. And boy, I wish it would have had the U1 chip, so that if it did fall in between the couch or you know, a cat knocked it over or something, you could get it to chirp at you and you could find it again.
Just get some double-sided tape, stick it on the back of the remote control. Take your AirTag.
Well, talking of muscle memory, as I just was in terms of using the device, we've got a really interesting story here that came up through Gizmodo on Wednesday about some people, I think 36 people, who have been testing out this idea of a robotic additional thumb, essentially. So it's like a 3D printed. And obviously got some wires and cables and things in it. Thumb, as if you're looking at your right hand right now and imagine that your thumb that's on the right hand side was coming, you had something equivalent on the left hand side. That's kind of what you're looking at if you don't get to look at the show notes, but it's worth having a look at.
Yeah, I found this to be fascinating. We talk oftentimes about augmented reality on this show and have for quite a long time. This is augmented physical, augmented human reality and prosthetics. And most of the time, prosthetics are focused on replacing functionality, right? A leg or something. Here we are adding to. And the pictures, I think Andy colored it nicely and described it. Have a look and you can see how things can be grasped now with one hand with two opposable thumbs in ways that you couldn't have done otherwise. And the article was articulating how intriguing it was that you would control it with your feet, so take a look at that, and that you're able to do some interesting things very, very quickly with it without much training, and that it became very natural is what these 36 participants said as a result.
Well, what's really interesting about the article, I don't know if you remember, I think it was two or three years ago at Moogfest, they had a session on brain-computer interfaces. And one of the research scientists who developed some of that work and actually had it used at the World Cup, where they had the one person who had been had a nerve problem and had not been able to move from the waist down using robotic augmented attachments that were controlled by his mind and then allowed him to stand up and kick off the first ball for the first match of the World Cup in Brazil. And that article got me thinking about that experience, because what was the most interesting part was how fast the brain adapts to incremental limbs. And in that session at Moogfest, he talked about actually they had used a brain chip to extend senses to where two monkeys had brain chips, and one could see the banana and the other one couldn't see anything but could reach for the banana, and would control the other through the senses, which really showed, you know, because I was looking at the article and it's like an extra opposable thumb. I couldn't think of any good use cases or how quickly I could adapt to it, right? The example of them holding the cup while stirring the cup at the same time to stir the sugar into the coffee was interesting to me. I thought that was very interesting. And speaking of extending the senses and being able to use them quickly, Michael, you found another really cool article.
Yeah, so this moves us in that same direction here, where a lentil-sized chip was embedded in a person's head to provide the sensation of touch. And the main purpose of this Wired article was to describe how fast someone could use the sense of touch that was transmitted it through the brain to then be able to control the robotic arm and manipulate things. So we're seeing some intriguing advances here on a lot of different levels about the human compute interface and where robotics, whether they're prosthetic or whether they are further enhancements, could be used in neat ways. So lots to stay tuned on. Definitely things to check out in the show notes. All right. Now, we've got a few things that are automotive related in our show for today. And one of the first ones we've talked about here on more than one occasion has been range anxiety and charging times. So as we're seeing more and more electric vehicles coming forward, there is an intriguing new innovation about being able to fast charge a battery, car size battery, not within 40 minutes or something like that, but essentially in the same amount of time it takes to refuel a vehicle at a gas pump. And to me, this is one of those innovations that, as it occurs, will decrease that distance faster and faster between electric vehicles and traditional gasoline-powered vehicles and increase adoption in a major, major way.
Well, one of the most interesting things that it ties to this article, this morning I was listening to a story on the radio, and they were saying that the Indy 500 is happening this weekend, right? Mm-hmm. The Indianapolis 500, and it's the first time they've got an all-female crew driver, et cetera, the whole crew, not just to the driver. And that got me thinking about one of the ways that the automotive industry rapidly advances technology is through race car driving.
Right. Yes.
And I was imagining an electric vehicle at the Indy 500 and how much that would just really accelerate everything, and the way they would have to accelerate it, because it's so difficult at these races to, fill up a battery, right?
Yeah.
Would be, could you do a drop battery replacement in less than 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Because I do know there are,
or however.
Yeah. Well, you do know there are sites that will swap out your battery as a way of doing the charging. So the fact that we're getting more and more ways of quote fast charging, I think is great as a way of reducing range anxiety and just making it much more the same driving experience / duration that you have of driving a long trip and you stop at a gas station, you fill up in 5 minutes and you move on, instead of having to wait for an hour or two while your battery charges.
So would you drive a Ford F-150 at the Indy 500, for example?
I think that would be awesome, right?
Why not? And you could power your whole pit crew with it too. Like if you needed to have a TV and an Apple TV and stuff that on the couch, afterwards, you could do that. The fact that Ford is coming to market now with this iconic vehicle is yet another signal that electric vehicles are going to be near ubiquitous in the near term, right? It's not just the little tiny Econo box. This is a big, heavy-duty truck that has heavy-duty capacity. And the further interesting thing is that when you consider, at least in the United States, the benefits on the price that are accorded to the tax breaks with it, it is cheaper, right? So we're getting to that price parity level that we've been waiting for quite a while. So what's going to be next is the infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
How do I make sure that when I get 200 miles away from my home, that I have a place to go and top off my battery, so to speak, right?
But the other interesting thing, that not only is an iconic vehicle, the Ford F-150 is the number one selling vehicle of all kind in the U.S. for 40 years straight.
Wow.
So changing that vehicle to be an all-electric option now is transformational to the industry. And I saw a study today from the International Energy Association, I believe, that is driving to all electric vehicles by 2035, period. Right.
I'm forgetting I'm forgetting what the UK's goal is, but it's quite close to that, if not exactly the same. Yeah.
Did you guys get a load of the frunk on this vehicle?
Oh yeah.
Isn't that awesome? The enormity of the engine compartment in the non-electrified version of this truck is huge. So the frunk likewise is absolutely immense.
Actually, interesting about that, my wife and I were talking about the vehicle yesterday, and she's like, well, and I was like, you know, you've got this giant trunk area on the back, and you can get them now with, you know, hard top lids to put your groceries in and stuff like that, because she's like, oh, people would steal stuff out of the back of the bed. And I totally forgot about the frunk, because you put it in the frunk, it's a full-size trunk that's at a much easier level to pick things in and out of instead of having to reach down into them, because, I mean, trucks are up higher.
You could practically sleep in the frunk. I mean, you know, this could be a camping vehicle, Andy. Like, if you wanted to go on a camping trip and, you know, power every electric device that you have, this could do it.
Ironically,
or just your house.
Ironically, I've just bought one of those gigantic, not generators, but, you know, weatherproof, weatherized chargers with, you know, multiple wall sockets and USB sockets and stuff for our next camping trip. So one of those sort of not a half suitcase sized, you know, things. But you're quite right.
Can I ask which one you got? We've got the Goal Zero Yeti model. It's like 1,500. I think, or something. No, is it 15,000? It's huge.
I will add it to the show notes. I'm forgetting the name of it. It's almost certainly not as big as the one you've just described. There was a new one that was coming.
Small grill.
Mine's designed to power key things in the house for at least 8 hours. Right.
Oh,
because we don't have a backup on the house. This is designed for camping, and it actually has extra solar panels that are like little briefcases that you can plug in and charge it.
I haven't got the solars for this yet. It's a Jackery portable Explorer, which is intended for like RV camping. But their Anker were about to release their equivalent or a new equivalent, and I'm a big Anker fan and customer. But everything I was reading basically said, don't, you know, the Jackery is, you know, the brand for this stuff. So, you can hook up the solar panels and stuff as well. But and we don't have any camping plans at the moment, but it looked useful. So.
Awesome.
Well, if you were to go on this camping expedition and you wanted to charge up, say, your handheld calculator, say you had a HP 25 Hewlett-Packard calculator, and you just wanted to kind of lay it down on a key charger, there's a guy who's done that. Of course there is, right? The fellow's name is Jan Richter. And he's re-engineered his calculator to be able to lay it down and just charge it up as you go. And I imagine the charge on that probably lasts a really long time because the battery draw on those calculators.
No, it doesn't, right? Because it's still got the draw, right?
Yeah. So fun stuff. Lots of battery things to Very be cool. considering and thinking about. Now, on a slightly less happy side, and this is something that, Michael, you and I are both customers of. Yes. We have a story that broke this week about the company called Eufy, EUFY, that has really laid in hard on security and security monitors, cameras that have end-to-end encryption, that are HomeKit integrated, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, this week, there was a glitch in a disturbance in the force that allowed for individuals to see streams of video that were not from their own cameras.
Yeah, it was 736 people out of their entire install base. And Eufy is actually a brand under the Anker company.
Yes.
So that's who actually makes it.
Yeah.
They reacted quickly. They fixed the problem within an hour. However, they did require that if you were impacted by this, you unplug, reboot, log out, log back in, you know, basically nuke in place and restart.
having said we're Anker customers, I'm an Anker customer. I've also got one of the Eufy RoboVax. That didn't start being remotely controlled during the week, so fortunately I feel like my RoboVac wasn't compromised, but this wasn't the greatest bit of news for sure. And it's just another reminder that you know, smart home stuff needs to be secured. In fact, the UK government, in their they do a thing, the Queen's speech, where the Queen goes to Parliament and says, this is what my government plans to do this year. And there was a ton of stuff in there about network security, requiring manufacturers to be more secure and so on. And whenever I read a technology story like that, sadly, the cynic in me wonders, especially with intra-country organizations, international organizations, I mean to say, how enforceable those kinds of standards and things are. And also, as we know, people generally go for the lowest common denominator by price, as much as they do by the best technology. But I was reading that story the last week and thinking, how enforceable is this stuff from an individual country's perspective? Well,
I recognize there are going to be security problems. I recognize there are going to be glitches. The fact that they responded quickly, I take that as a positive. They didn't sweep it under the rug. They didn't say, no, it didn't, right? They
admitted their problem.
They resolved the problem.
RoboVac.
Yeah. Along the same line, all my cameras face outwards. Nothing's pointed in the house. There are no cameras in the house.
Yeah.
So if you saw somebody walking by a house, of course.
Yeah. So have you turned? So that means you've turned them back on, right?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't as yet. I've turned off the home base. I've turned off the cameras, and the quibble.
Log out. Log back in.
The quibble that I have on all this is that the only admission was via social media, and it was not directed to customers. As a customer,
yeah,
I'm eminently discoverable. Mm. And according to GDPR, which, you know, is applicable, Andy, as you were just describing, the company is obligated to let their customers know this was a problem. Here is the story, and this is
you are not a European customer.
But they are.
You have to be in the U.S. GDPR does not apply to you as a U.S. customer.
But if their European customers were affected, they are obligated to announce that to the European authorities.
Inform their European customers.
To the European authority. The European Privacy Regulator, but in Dublin, in fact.
Absolutely.
So, there's some very interesting implications as to what happened.
And it would really be nice if that level of data privacy regulation, which is what it has to be, were applied uniformly, but it's not. And in the U.S., we are still the customer, mm-hmm. and also the service that's being sold. So
all that being said, and yes, I'm aware of what laws apply to me in individually, and I realize there are also European nationals that are in different countries too, and they don't relinquish necessarily their citizenship when they sign a contract with a company too. All that being said, these are challenging times. Security is not easy. Space is not easy, right? So we have a number of things that are not easy. I'm still waiting just a smidge on all this.
Before we move on immediately, because we do need to move on, I just want to give a shout out to my friend Rory Ketlin-Jones at Ruskin147 on Twitter, who has a new book out that I started reading at the weekend. I've read... I'm about two-thirds of the way through now, that I'll put in the show notes. It's called Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era, and it covers a ton of stuff around some of the topics we've just been talking about, data privacy, obviously social.
Awesome.
Always On, you can tell from the title. Really good book. I do recommend it.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Love to take a look at that, too. And see, doesn't that fit nicely in the show? It just, you know, perfectly inserted in there. So we said space is hard, and as an example of how hard it is, we have a success, and a big one to celebrate here from China, who has a rover on Mars. So awesome sauce, right?
This, yes, the Star Wars have officially now begun. We now have two international countries and agencies driving rovers around in outer space. Well, not in outer space, on an interplanetary body. And yep. This is how
inner space.
This is how it all begins, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you have to navigate. You know, are you driving on the right? Or are you driving on the left? You know, you have to be concerned about all those sort of things now.
I'm telling you, moisture farms and lightsabers come next.
Now, Michael, you staying on Mars here for just a mo. You found a cool article that says, "Hey, Zigbee is on Mars, right?" So, smart homes are interplanetary at this point.
Yeah, and just 30 seconds, right? We've talked a lot about the Ingenuity Mars helicopter and how cool all the new tech on it is. Well, it's also got some really old tech, which is Zigbee, which has been around for home automation for, 20 years that I'm aware of, if not longer. But it was kind of cool to see this article, and, you know, sometimes it just works.
There you are. All right, so staying on small chips and chip environments, Michael, you've got a pair of stories around running quantum computing algorithms on Raspberry Pi. Tell us more about this.
I had a great opportunity this week to listen into a talk by Dr. Jan Rainer Lahmann, I believe is his last name, talking about a project that he put together to allow you to run a Raspberry Pi as a quantum computer simulator so that you can learn quantum computing. And session was really great. He has all of it's available on GitHub at Rasqberry. there's a nice little article that I found after talking with him it was really a project that he and his son did. And there's two setups you can do. You can do one where you actually use a 3D printer and print the model of the IBM quantum computer that's located up in the research lab at Yorktown. Right, that you see in all the iconic pictures that IBM posts, right? You can print that and put a touchscreen on the back to control it. Or there's another one that he has that actually uses a piece of kit to provide an 8x8 LED interface on the Raspberry Pi. So I thought both of those were really, really cool. If you're interested in quantum computing, go check out the Qiskit framework the sessions to allow you to set up your own quantum computer simulator on Raspberry Pi, which you actually can reconfigure to call quantum computer cloud-based services and actually hit the real quantum computer. Pretty cool.
So should That's we do awesome. Some? Should we do some super quick hits to round us out here?
Yes. I think we need to.
I'm excited about the next two stories that we've got. In fact, I'm excited about the last three stories that we've got. So let's give them each 30 seconds. Turns out my AirTags will work as NFC triggers for Apple Shortcuts. I'm going to try this. There's a great story here from MacRumors. It links to one in iCulture, which is out of the Netherlands. So I've had to do a bit of translation to figure it out. But that sounds very cool. It doesn't matter whether the AirTag's already configured for finding. You can use it as a trigger, which is I'm going to have to think about what I want to use it for. We've also got a Lego story because we love some Lego, about the largest Marvel Lego set ever made, which is now the Daily Bugle. I think previously it was either the Helicarrier or the Avengers compound or the Avengers tower. But this looks very cool, far too big for me to buy, and I know that obviously I've got my R2-D2 that you both have chipped in to buy me that's on its way, so yep. I don't have room for that.
You just keep waiting for that.
I'm so excited.
Maybe you ought to use your Apple tag as the trigger to let us know when it arrives.
And the last one is one that Ian tweeted just today, which I think is kind of fun. AI turning the Spice Girls song Wannabe, their first single, into a Nine Inch Nails song, which I just kind of love. maybe we can remix more sort of classic pop songs into Nine Inch Nails depressive rock sort of stuff.
You got to wonder why Nine Inch Nails was selected. I mean, do we have such the compendium of Nine Inch Nails style music?
No, there's a compendium of Nine Inch Nails music. And I actually enjoy a lot of Nine Inch Nails. So,
so yeah, apologies for rushing through those last few links, but they're short hits. But do go take a look at the show notes and check them out, because that was a bit of fun.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate everybody's time listening to the show this week. And, you know, if you want to, go to our website at gamesatwork.biz. Check out the show notes. Or if you pull them up in your favorite podcatcher, why don't you click through to give us a review?
We would love that.
And we can't wait to talk about tech and fun and work and gaming with you all again soon. So stay in touch.
Sounds good.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.